I'm delighted now to welcome to the program Najwan Darwish. He is a Palestinian poet. His work has been translated into many languages, and he is a resident right now at the Santa Fe Art Institute. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary.
And Katie Avery is with us. She works at the Santa Fe Art Institute, and Najwan is part of Open Studios, which is happening tomorrow night.
Yes. Tomorrow night at 5:30, we will be hosting our Open Studios event at the Santa Fe Art Institute, which will feature all 10 of our artists and writers in residence, Najwan being one of them.
And Open Studios are always wonderful events that the public is invited to and is great fun and really interesting.
And they're free.
And they're free, and there's even refreshments. So I was thinking, because your poetry is wonderful and very powerful, maybe we could start with your reading a poem in Arabic. I'll read the translation in English, and we can go on from there.
Okay. باص الكوابيس رأيتهم يضعون خالاتي في أكياس بلاستيك سوداء وفي زوايا الأكياس تتجمع دماؤهن الحارة لكن أنا ليس لي خالات عرفت أنهم قد قتلوا نتاشا ابنتي التي في الثالثة لكن أنا ليس لي ابنة قيل لي إنهم اغتصبوا زوجتي قبل أن يجروا جسمها على الدرج ويتركوه في الشارع لكن أنا لم أتزوج لا شك هذه نظارة التي تحطمت تحت البسطار لكن أنا لا ألبس نظارة كنت نائما في بيت والدي أحلم بالسفر إلى بيتها وحين استيقظت رأيت إخوتي يتدلون من سقف كنيسة القيامة كان الرب يقول من الشفقة هذا ألمي أنا وكنت أستجمع كبرياء المعلقين وأقول لا بل هذا ألمنا الألم يضيء ويصير أحب إلي من كوابيسي لن أهرب للشمال أيها الرب لا تحسبني من الذين يبحثون عن ملاذ سنكمل لاحقا هذا الحساب علي أن أمضي الآن إلى النوم لا أريد أن أتأخر عن باص الكوابيس الذاهب إلى صبرا وشتيلة.
And the poem is called The Nightmare Bus. I saw them stuff my aunts into plastic sacks. Their hot blood pooled in the corners of the bags. But I have no aunts. I knew they had killed Natasha, my three-year-old daughter. But I have no daughter. I was told they raped my wife, then dragged her body down the stairs and left it lying on the street. But I am not married. Those are certainly my glasses that were crushed under their boots, but I don't wear glasses. I slept in my parents' house, and I was dreaming about her house. When I awoke, my brothers hung from the roof of the Church of the Resurrection. Out of compassion, the Lord said, "This is my own suffering." I mustered up the hanged men's pride and said, in my opinion, it's ours. Pain illuminates everything, and I love it more than my nightmares. I will not flee to the north. O Lord, don't count me among the ones seeking shelter. We'll continue this report later. I've got to go sleep now. I don't want to miss the nightmare bus that goes to Sabra and Shatila. We're talking to poet Najwan Darwish, and I think when I read your poem, when I think of poets from places that are going through such difficult times, I mean, you were born and raised in Jerusalem, you're Palestinian, that there's a lot more at stake when you write poetry than for, say, an American who is writing about their garden or something like this. You are engaged politically, you're engaged with the people around you. Do you experience it that way?
Not necessarily. It's not necessary to be born in a war zone to be politically engaged. If you are a good writer, you could be engaged even if you are born in Switzerland. So it's about the awareness. What kind of awareness do you have to the place you are in, to the history you are in? In this place, there is no peaceful, there is no country which could say that it has peace and peaceful history. We all living in a contested earth.
So, how did you become a poet? How did you start writing?
You know, I never thought of this question. But I think one of the first things I wrote against my teachers in school. So, like mocking the teachers. This was the beginning, and I think also it's was part of it, a kind of reflection against the Israeli occupation we are living under. So I think the harsh experiences in childhood with occupation, they were like a sort of motivation. But later on you would be interested in poetry as art, despite of the motivation. So right. You would be obsessed with the art of poetry.
Even as you're dealing with the same material.
Yes, despite of the material. They always say material in poetry is not the issue. Of course, it's important what you are saying and what you have to say. But the more important, how you say it.
You think that's more important?
Yes, because the things we are saying, somehow they are sort of public knowledge. But what's special, how we say them in art. So the issue is to be a good artist in the beginning.
Now, what was your childhood like in Jerusalem?
Nothing special, like any Palestinian who would grow up under the occupation. It's unusual. You would be faced every day with a sort of military occupation, with a lot of details which are not very pleasant.
How did it affect your life as a child going to school every day, for example?
To be honest with you, I'm not a big fan of talking about suffering. I'm always facing these things and I'm passing. I'm not stopping much to remember. Sometimes when I do remember things, I do write them as poems.
Would you like to read another poem? Do you want to read one in English?
In English? Okay, I will try with one. Even my English is not beautiful. And before we were doing the interview, I was saying to myself, oh my God, you are doing an interview in English. This would be horrible to the listeners. But I remembered once listening to an interview with the Spanish artist, Salvador Dali. And his English is very terrible. And he was brave enough to make an interview in English. So I said to myself, I won't be worse than Dali. So this poem called Reserved. Once I tried to sit on one of the vacant seats of hope, but the word reserved was squatting there like a hyena. I did not sit down. No one sat down. The seats of hope are always reserved.
Poetry of Najwan Darwish. So, I mean, it is interesting and I think important for people to hear and understand that you don't like to talk directly about what you experience because you don't like to talk about suffering. And it comes out in your poems in so many ways. When you write a poem and you feel that you have brought the craft to the highest level that you are able to and the poem is complete, does that transform your suffering in any way?
In a way, you would feel a kind of satisfaction that you made it into a piece of art, and that art itself has a power to move. So when I would see, for example, this poem, The Nightmare Bus to Sabra and Shatila, is reaching people from different languages and different cultures, I would feel that at least I did a small thing to the victim of this massacre, which the poem is talking about, which is the famous massacre of Sabra and Shatila, which happened in Lebanon during the Israeli invasion to the capital of Lebanon in 1982. So it would give you a feeling that you could speak for voiceless victims, not just for my people, for Palestinians. I think my work concerned with injustice all over the world.
I went to the reading the other night. There was a reading downtown where you and other residents of the Santa Fe Art Institute were reading your work, and it seemed like there was a deep understanding that it's not just that you Palestinians are the victims that permeates your work.
This is true. First, it's how to deal with victimhood. On a personal level, I never look at myself as a victim, and I am sometimes critical to the victim attitude, even if there is a huge injustice on me as a Palestinian. But injustice is a universal phenomena, and this is how we deal with it. And injustice against a nation or a people or even a one person is against everyone. This is how I do see injustice.
When you look at what Palestinians are going through now, I mean, when I read some of the articles that I read in the paper of what's happening now, the young teenagers being beaten up sort of mob style, it reminds me so much of the Jim Crow period in the United States, you know, the what Southern black people endured over such a long period of time.
It seems that always we could find these similarity. It seems that injustice has the same nature, and colonialism sometimes has the same nature. In Palestine, we are living under occupation for more than six decades. We are living under occupation. And it's a huge injustice. I think it's one of the rare models where you could find direct military occupation with an apartheid system, with wall, with whatever you want to see, you could see in Palestine nowadays.
So let's read another poem now, and we're going to do it the opposite way now. I'm going to read it in English, and you'll read it in Arabic. We're talking to poet Najwan Darwish. The poem is called Earl Grey. The women who sowed and harvested the tea to be packaged in Earl Grey boxes, do they forgive me when I drink the torments of 300 years in a single cup of tea? Do they forgive me, my sisters who were sold for $200 in the cities of salt? Earl Grey, no one mentions the names of the women who died in the fields. Earl Grey, no one knows the names of those who were sold in the cities of salt. Massive ships sailing on God's tears, transporting the colony's pain. This is the tea of Asia's daughters. You, Earl Thief, you, pirate.
اللواتي غرسنا الشاي وقطفنه ليعلب في صناديق إيرل غراي. هل يسامحنني حين أشرب عذابات 300 سنة في كأس شاي؟ هل يسامحنني شقيقات المباعات $200 في مدن الملح؟ إيرل غراي لا أحد يذكر أسماء اللواتي متن في الحقول. إيرل غراي لا أحد يعرف أسماء اللواتي يبعن في مدن الملح. سفن ضخمة تبحر في دموع الرب وهي تنقل ألم المستعمرات. هذا شاي بنات آسيا أيها الإيرل اللص أيها القرصان.
Let's talk for a moment about translation. I'm looking at all these poems that you've written, and each one translated by a different person and sometimes by a couple of different people. How do you work with translators and to really get the translation that you feel expresses the Arabic in English in other languages?
Maybe first we have to mention the translators of the poems we were reading. The first one, The Nightmare Bus, was translated by Marlene Hacker, the great American poet and translator, with Antoine Joki, my translator into French.
And you have a beautiful, slim volume of poetry translated into French. I think it's a bilingual edition.
Yes, yeah. It translated by Antoine Joki, who's one of the finest translators of Arabic poetry into French. The other poem, Early Grey, was translated by poet Andrew Nance. He's a poet living now in Iowa City. And, for example, Reserved was translated by marvelous translator Karim James Abu Zaid from Berkeley. All of them were doing great job in translation. I think sometimes I am receiving sort of good comments on the poetry, and so I always would say these are the translators.
The translators of poetry have to be incredibly sensitive, and they have to be really poets themselves.
Yeah, and I think I'm quite lucky with my translators into English.
What are you doing at the Santa Fe Art Institute? What are you working on?
I'm sleeping there. I'm working on my new collection in Arabic. So I'm trying to finish it. And it's under the title, When Other Invaders Come. This is the manuscript I'm working on now at Santa Fe.
When you are back home, when you're in Jerusalem, how do you work with your poetry? Do you give readings? Do you teach? What's your life like?
I'm sleeping much. I spent part of my life sleeping at the daytime and waking up at night. At night, everyone is sleeping in Jerusalem, so in many nights I would be the only one who's awake in the city.
And you're just working?
Yes, I'm just working. I'm writing much, and I'm publishing much. I'm not very much involved in the social life.
Do you have contact with your readers?
I have to say, many of my readers are in the Arab world, which we don't have much physical contact with. In Palestine, we live, because of the occupation, under a kind of isolation. So Arabs from all the Arab countries, which do read my language, and which I do read them, they can't come to Palestine. And it's also difficult for us to go to the Arab countries. So I am somehow cut in from my surrounding culture.
Are you in contact through email? I mean,
yeah, through publishing mainly, because my work is most of the time published in the Arab world in magazines and newspapers and so.
We've got time for another poem. Do you want to read the poem Jerusalem?
Yes.
Well,
please.
Let's see. So maybe I'll just read it in English.
Yes.
Okay. Jerusalem. When I leave you, I turn to stone, and when I come back, I turn to stone. I name you Medusa. I name you the older sister of Sodom and Gomorrah, you baptismal basin that burned Rome. The murdered hum their poems on the hills, and the rebels reproach the tellers of their stories. When I leave the sea behind and come back to you, come back by this small river that flows in your despair, I hear the reciters of the Quran and the shrouders of corpses. I hear the dust of the condolers. I am not yet 30, but you buried me time and again, and each time for your sake I emerge from the earth. So let those who sing your praises go to hell, those who sell souvenirs of your pain, and those who are standing with me now in the picture. I name you Medusa. I name you the older sister of Sodom and Gomorrah, you baptismal basin that still burns. When I leave you, I turn to stone. When I come back, I turn to stone. And tell us about the translator of this poem.
He is Karim Jims Abu Zaid, who's now working on a selected poems of my work, which would be published in 2014 through New York Review Books. So Karim is really one of the most sensitive translators I ever work with. And he's always shocks me with his choices and with the very good choices. And I always ask him, Karim, you should be writing poetry secretly. So he laughs. And
does
he say, no, my friends do write poetry, I don't. But he's very sensitive with linguistic choices. He would always find the equivalents of, not just of the words, of the whole poetic craft.
Now, are you actively part of peace movements or activist movements yourself?
Not with peace movements, because I have so much a critic toward peace movements, because in many times we call them peace business.
What do you mean?
I mean that a lot of the word peace is a beautiful slogan, but in the reality, there is a lot of injustice hidden under the slogan of peace. So you could support the Israeli occupation by saying that I am a peace activist. But in the reality, as a peace activist, you should ask yourself whom you are helping, whom you are covering through this peace activism.
Do you think there is no legitimate and true peace activism?
Not really, but in the last two decades, at least in Palestine, the whole concept of the peace process was somehow fake and corrupt. I'm talking specifically about Palestine. So the peace process of the Middle East is a big lie, and an unpleasant joke.
Do you envision a real peace process?
No, not really. This peace process, I think that in general, peace is a fruit of justice. But what they were trying to implement with the so-called peace process, a kind of peace with injustice together, which doesn't work in my opinion.
Okay, but then is there a justice movement that you feel you are part of or that you are taking active part in?
Most of the time, I would try to be in any efforts toward justice, toward anti-colonialism, anti-occupation. Anything would be anti-occupation, I would be under it automatically.
At this point, it's such a... For outside observers like me, and I'm not heavily involved in this issue particularly, it seems like we're in a kind of hopeless moment.
Somehow, very true, yeah. We are living in a dark moment, and not just in Palestine. I think internationally we are living in a sort of dark ages, but they are unacknowledged. Dark ages. Everyone is acting like we are living in a beautiful era, democracy era. No, we are living in a black era. And there is a lot of fascism around the world. And I could mention a lot of fascist countries about around the world. But the issue that they are not very aware of themselves as fascist countries, and we are not very aware about our age as a dark age. But I have no doubts that we are living now in new dark ages.
Is there anything that gives you hope?
Life itself. You, in the moment you are living, you are, and the struggle is a kind of hope. And despite of these dark ages, I am happy that I'm living in them, despite of the darkness. And I think we all, what we can do is to face this darkness and to work against it somehow.
Najwan Darwish is a Palestinian poet in residence at the Santa Fe Art Institute. A collection of his poetry will be available in a couple of years, and if I'm still sitting here, we will get you back on the air. And Katie Avery, tell us once again about the Open Studios tomorrow night.
So tomorrow at Open Studios, we will also be selling the Beirut 39 anthology, which Najwan is featured in. And I should point out that his residency is a special fee-free residency sponsored through the Alliance for Artist Communities. And we are one of 23 artist residency programs that have been hosting the Beirut 39 writers.
And that's the idea that Najwan is one of the 39 best Arab writers under the age of 40, which
yes.
is what this anthology
yes.
is about. So once again, what time should people be at the Santa Fe Art Institute?
Open Studio starts at 5:30 tomorrow evening.
Well, we will see you there, Najwan and Katie. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks,
thank you.
Thanks.